This podcast is from the IDPF Digital Book 2012 Conference at Book Expo America.
Hi, and welcome to High Design and Children's eBooks, Business Opportunities and Distribution Platform Realities. Today, what we would like to do is help content creators navigate an increasingly complex set of production and distribution challenges, and also the business opportunities associated with creating highly designed books. So let me start by introducing myself and the panelists. We have, to my right, Lisa McCloy-Kelly. She is the VP and Director of eBook Production, Strategy, and Operations at Random House. To her left is Woody Sears. Woody is a founder of Zooka, publisher of mobile children's books. And Teo Gray, to his left, is founder and creative director at Touch Press, and they'll tell you a little bit more about themselves when they get up here. So I'm going to begin with just a high-level overview of fixed layout, one of the many options we have for publishing high-design books. So we're thinking, if you're a content creator, you're asking yourself, I have this great content. How do I make it look good and sell well on all of these different platforms? And I think those are big, complex questions, and we hope to help answer them today. So to get started, see if we can play this. This is a children's book in iBooks, and you probably can't hear it too well, but we've got chickens. So the mouse is basically equivalent to a touch on an iPad, and what you're seeing is from a fixed layout ebook. So we've got all custom HTML and scripting going on in there. So what is fixed layout? This should be a basic overview for most of you. I'm sure this is quite familiar. It's not reflowable text. In reflowable layouts, you've got text and art, not designed necessarily to maintain a particular ratio with one another. Neither the concept of page nor the design of the book convey the essential message of the book. The design is largely editable by the reader or the end user. The fonts, text size, text and background colors, margins, etc., those are changeable and not essential to the book. And text reflows as all of these elements change. So this is Steve Jobs in iBooks. You've got two very different looking bits of the same content, getting the same message out there. So you've got night mode and landscape view, and you've got regular mode with the sepia background in portrait view. On the other hand, in fixed page layouts, you have the concept of page or spread being central to the reading experience. It's really important that you maintain a certain aspect ratio between the and position between the elements, so the text and the images need to maintain a certain ratio to one another. And the layout is defined at the level of page or spread. Importantly, the user has no control over the layout. This is the same book. You're seeing it a few different times. So we've got Olivia on the Kindle Fire previewer. You can see what it looks like when someone is double tapping. The text expands. Got Olivia on Nook. Very similar. And Olivia on iBooks, and you have that sense of spreads and pages. Reflowable books are best for most kinds of books, not necessarily the kind that we're focusing on today, but they accommodate user preferences, and for reading on devices of different sizes and orientations like smartphones, they're really ideal. But sometimes you just need fixed pages. For children's picture books, graphic novels, comics, manga, poetry and other verse, and certain kinds of highly designed content, you really do need those things. Got a couple examples in the bottom there. The ideal is layouts that adapt based on a combination of reader preferences and device and reading system capabilities. This is what Liza talked about yesterday, and I thought her talk was really fantastic in explaining what would be great for publishers not to have to deal with the issues of reading systems. But unfortunately, the reality is that we do, and this is not widely an option. When we're publishing fixed layout books today, we have a few things to think about. The major reading platforms are demanding very different and significantly different files from the content creator, and they're reading our books in meaningfully different ways, in ways that will mean something different to the person consuming your book. book functionality is limited by format and reading system. What works in iBooks or on Nook doesn't necessarily work on the Kindle Fire. One great example is synced audio and text. So that's the book functionality. There are added operational costs, obviously, of not only creating, but a lot of quality assurance done on all of these different formats to create a similar consistent reading experience. Metadata, there's a bit of confusion there. Is each format a different product? There, obviously, we've had a lot of discussion about this, and I'm not going to tell you how you should make ISBNs, but we've sort of come down on the side of it's the same product, and we hope that we're able to help readers see them that way. Production, there are challenges in making a single file because you can't for this kind of book. Are these files easily edited? It's another question. In some cases, retailers and reading systems are asking for files that are not easily edited. So what do we do down the line 1 or 2 years from now when inevitably these books are not what people are reading today? And then we've got fewer possibilities for automation in our distribution platforms, and a bit of customer confusion, which I think is worth getting into in a little bit more detail. You've got title selection issues. Books that may be available at one reader or at one e-retailer may not be available at another. You've got functionality confusion. You've got a reader who's saying, oh, yeah, I can do this on the iPad. That is great. And then they go and they're reading on the iPad and iBooks, and they switch to, I don't know, Kindle for iPad, and it's very, very different. And I think it's creating confusion about what kinds of books we are making. Even if we all make really amazing picture books or highly designed content, it's not going to come across consistently to a base of customers who don't necessarily understand the definitions of fixed layout, what limitations we're operating with. I think that's difficult. If you look at what's happened to enhanced books, they haven't taken off. And yeah, there isn't necessarily a lot of customer demand for things with shiny video and audio in it. But I think there's also a lot of confusion because of what publishers are preparing and how the retailers who sell our books are defining this kind of content. There are two versions of the same title available from one ebook retailer. Which one should a customer buy? Sometimes you've got the plain old one, and you've got something that's really sparkly and shiny. You really try to put this out in the product description. It's very clear to you as the publisher because you wrote a good product description. But did someone read it? Did someone scroll all the way down and see that this is the one that's enhanced with audio and video and interactivity, and this one is the plain one, and that's why it's a dollar cheaper or it's the same price or whatever? And then what happens when you purchase an ebook today? What happens to that ebook a year from now? Are you going to get the latest interactivity update? Probably not, because it's probably a new product now. So IDPF has come along and tried to fix a lot of this. They ratified fixed layout metadata for EPUB in March. This defines the ways that content creators should be expressing how we intend for content to appear. Do we want the pages to be fixed? Do we want them to be reflowable? Do we want a mix of the two? This page is fixed and that is reflowable. What is the orientation that this should appear in? Landscape, the horizontal mode, or portrait only, or both? Should the content be sewn together as spreads, and in what context? So these are all, I think the IDPF fixed layout metadata is obviously a very good movement in the direction that we want to see, but we're not seeing reading systems all read it. And when you're dealing with not only do I make an app, do I make a regular ebook, do I make a website, do I make a reflowable versus a fixed layout ebook, and these are big questions that I think are kind of a headache, but manageable. And Lisa's going to get a little bit more into, I think, what the IDPF is doing. Maybe a little bit, just a little bit. and I'm going to let her talk.
So I'm Lisa McCloy Kelly from Random House, and I wanted to talk to you a little bit today about creating the best experience for your illustrated books, because this is a bit of a challenge these days. This is how I started my year. Oh, geez, really? Because every time you turn around this year, there's something new. I was at a session this morning that somebody was talking about, like, this is how you do KF8. And, you know, 5 minutes later, I was in a conversation with somebody from Amazon who just casually mentioned somebody the thing that made me say, I think that session was all wrong. And, oh, gosh. And that's how every single week is this year. And that's for me, who lives this stuff. So I can't imagine what it's like for you guys, because you're out there trying to make business decisions and figure out what to do with these books. And the waters are really, really murky right now. So one of the big headaches that we've been talking about is the fact that kids' book formats have fragmented. And at the moment, for any given kids' title that you're trying to do into a traditional ebook space, you're making at least four files, or you should be making at least four files if you're trying to get it widely available. So there's a BNN EPUB, there's a Kindle KF8, there's a fixed EPUB 2 plus that a lot of us are doing that's working, you know, maybe for Kobo, for Apple. And then typically there's a reflowable EPUB, because there's still not a great experience on small devices for these fixed page titles. Same thing with graphics, manga, comic books. There are multiple formats that you have to produce, and this is a very quickly moving target. Fixed page that we all got excited about a year ago, that a lot of people spent a lot of time and energy making cookbooks and craft books and gardening books, and all of these big illustrated books fit little screens. Sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. It works really well for kids. It works really well mostly for comics. Sometimes it works in these other categories. It really depends on how much content you're trying to shove into a screen. It also depends on how committed you are to the design of that original and to the actual presentation of that original material. It's very hard for authors, for publishers, to let go of what they felt like was the ideal representation and think about how it has this new life. So fixed page a year ago made a lot of people in publishing feel very comfortable, and I don't know that it made a lot of readers feel really comfortable, which is why I say meh. Basic rendering things are still a big, big issue across these platforms. These are just a couple of examples of how CSS is not supported in the same way. The way that your images are either blown up to fit the width of the page or not, the way that your justification works, it doesn't really matter sometimes what you put in your files. The reading systems just aren't going to do it. And another example of that, maybe a little squished. So this is just a snapshot of how complicated the landscape is if you're trying to make a lot of really interactive with audio, with video, with interactivity, with sync this. There are all of these possibilities for the products that you can make. And then it comes down to which reading systems actually do all of that. And right now, everybody does reflow. And all the rest of it, not very many people do it. You see, the one partner that's doing it really well right now is Apple. And you see, just announced yesterday, that Google is making good headway in that direction. But it's a business decision that you have to make when you're thinking about a product of, what is the material I have? What is the best product I can make? And then where the heck can I sell that stuff? So the other thing that happened this year that I think kind of threw a bit of a monkey wrench into the works of, you know, are we going to make this format, that format, was the introduction of iBooks Author. And there, for me, are two really unique and interesting things about iBooks Author. The first is that it introduces concept of a fixed layout that was designed for screen, that basically said, here is your canvas, and it fits our screen, and design your book to fit inside of that. And I saw that and thought, there's no reason we couldn't have done this a year ago. We just didn't want to. As a publishing community, we didn't want to sit and design a screen, and we were so nervous about the number of screens that there would be out there that it was very hard to figure out how you would design for screen. So we adapted things into fixed that were adaptations of print trims, as opposed to being, let's pick a nice size that fits a screen. And this pushes us in that direction and in a good way. The other thing that I find that's really amazing and unique about iBooks Author is that it has full support of HTML, CSS, JavaScript, interactivity, so that you can embed real app-like functionality in the books that you publish. We haven't seen many of these hit the market yet that do a lot of this. Random House published this one last week. It's called American Grown. It's by Michelle Obama. And we've put over 30 interactive widgets into this book so that there are full-fledged games and cover flows and really unique ways to interact with the content. And the amazing thing about doing this is that there's nothing that we put into that code that shouldn't be well supported once reading systems actually deal with EPUB 3, if and when reading systems actually are able to render EPUB 3. So that kind of gets you to thinking about, what about ebooks and apps? Where are we now with that? Right now, today, we still have this conundrum of, you know, do you build an ebook? Do you build an app? But you see all these possibilities for things that we can do inside of EPUB 3. And some of the examples here, embedded slideshows, embedded video. We've got an interactive calculator that you can put in your height and your weight, and it's going to help you figure out a diet book. I showed the timeline that is from American Grown that is fully interactive. We've got interactive kids books. In the case of that center one at the top, that's an Oprah edition for her new book club of Wild that we put on sale this week. And it was the first time that we were actually able to take something, highlight it inside of the text, and very quietly put in a note that popped up this little footnote and that drops it back away. And it was a big challenge to get that done. It was an exciting thing to do because we were trying to find a way to not upset your reading experience of this book, but for you to also be visually aware of the fact that you're reading Oprah's edition of the book, and now you have this visual clue to go searching for her notes about why she loved this passage. The things that really for me now come down to, do you need an ebook, do you need an app, is that you need to understand whether you really need local storage, whether you really need a database behind this thing because you want really robust random navigation. All of these reading systems allow you to take things that are nonlinear, which is the technical way of specifying it inside of EPUB, and take a page here or there out of the order of a book. But the book itself still has a structure and an order. And the beauty of an app has always been that you can completely throw that up in the air and get rid of it. And that's still the case. If you really, really need to throw it all up in the air and navigate in any way, you probably still need an app. But if you need just little bits of app functionality, if you need a little bit of interactivity, if you need to, you know, have kids move things on around on a page, you can start doing that now in these e-reading systems, and hopefully we'll be able to do more of it as EPUB 3 is more predominantly accepted. So the scary thing, though, is what does this all mean for readers? And yeah, there we go. It's confusing for readers. Readers have no idea how complicated this all is. They have no idea. When you go out to buy a new reader and you're new to this industry, you saw somebody with their Kindle on the plane the other day or their iPad or something else, you don't go out buying a reading system. Like, people don't make checklists, or at least I do, but other people don't, where you sit there and go, I need to read my magazines, I need to read my newspapers, I need to read, 15 fiction books, I need to have 15 kids' books. Which is the best reading system for that? They don't do it. They buy on impulse. They saw a TV ad where somebody was on a beach and they had a Kindle. they saw a bus sign that said that iPad was good for everything. They walked into a Barnes & Noble store. A friend recommended something. And so most people's first introduction into e-reading is not based on an informed decision of how best to consume the content that they want. It's based on something else. And once they've bought into this platform, then they start to discover that maybe the experience is good or the experience is bad, but they don't necessarily realize the experience is different somewhere else on another device, because we don't explain that to them. We just want them to have the content. So we're in this very chicken and egg place where trying to get people to want more interactive content is tough because they don't know that they should want it. And that said, it looks like, you know, we're in this spot right now where it's like there's EPUB 3 and EPUB 3 does all this stuff. There are all these reading systems. They don't do EPUB 3 yet. For me, it's still the mantra. I still think that we can get there and we can work together, and that regardless of what they said in that session this morning, you can make one EPUB file that is a best practice to distribute to everybody. So thank you.
Hello, I'm Woody Sears from Zooka. I'll just do a quick introduction of who Zooka is. You guys are probably familiar with Random House and Simon & Schuster, but we're a relatively new kid on the block. Zooka is 100% focused on digital, and all of our content is geared toward kids, so fixed layout interactivity is what we live and breathe every day. Our flagship brand is iStoryTime, and that's essentially picture books that are narrated and interactive and go across a variety of platforms. We also do some comics as well as some other interactive properties that primarily exist as apps. So we're coming at this from a little bit different perspective, and I guess... digital is new to all of us, but that's essentially how we built our company 3 years ago. We launched our first app before EPUB 3 existed or there was a solution for fixed layout children's books on devices. So we really look at it from a perspective is what's the market and how can we best address it with our products. We work in a variety of different formats. We license content from publishers and media companies. We design and develop our own unique IP, and then we also work as a service contractor for publishers. And we're agnostic in terms of the operating systems and devices that we support. So we really have a very broad selection there. I would love to be up here and tell you, point a finger and say this is the format you should support and you will address the majority of the market. But the reality today is you need to address most of these with your properties. But before you figure out which channel you're going to go through or which how you're going to develop the product, you really want to look at the property itself and look at what you want to achieve with that specific title and what's appropriate for that story and what's appropriate for the age category that it addresses. And that's the most important thing. And in many cases, you're going to be able to get some flavor of these various channels with that property. In some cases, you'll only be able to address the app space, like Lisa was saying, if you really want that out-of-the-box experience and things aren't going to flow in a linear fashion. You want to be able to support things like being able to message your customers and have a channel of communication directly to them. Something that's unique to the app platforms is you can integrate something like push messages and have your customers opt in and receive alerts when you come out with new titles. And over 90% of our iStoryTime customer base opt in for those types of things. So something unique that isn't supported yet in these other channels and something we'd love to see there. at a very baseline, our products all include the read aloud functionality. So as Samantha was saying earlier, we still don't have that support on the Kindle editions yet. Let's see, just timed out here. But something we expect to come down soon. But so in most cases, we're addressing all of these other channels, and we talked about customer confusion and having the same title be available in different formats and support different functionality. And we don't see that as quite as big of a problem. If we can have the basic functionality work across most of the platforms and then add something extra in the app space or in some of the other channels, then that's okay, because from what we've seen, those people aren't shopping in both the channels for their books. When you have somebody who's accustomed to shopping from apps from their iPad, then that's where they go to look for new content. Or if they buy all their books through iBooks, then they're not out shopping in the Barnes & Noble bookstore for children's books. So having those precisely the same isn't something that necessarily keeps us up at night, as much as we'd like to support the full functionality in all those spaces. and so some of those unique properties we talked about with apps, they're always going to be one step ahead because they can support the native functionality of the device, and they're always going to support the latest and greatest features of those operating systems. So the things like the push messages or, for example, our Pirates app, you can use the face detection technology of the camera to virtually overlay a pirate beard and pirate hat on top of your head in real time and take a photo of it, things that you just can't do in the various ebook channels. And those are things that, you know, that's very unique to this brand and this property, and something that you don't necessarily need to achieve across all of your titles, but are going to have that wow factor and things that people talk about, and a way that we can really leverage the capabilities of these devices. At the same time, there's a lot to be said for reading all of your books through a single reader where the user and the child and the parent know exactly how to start the book every time. They know how to start the narration. They know that they're going to end up in the same place that they left off when they go back into that app. So there's arguments for both, and the reasons why not apps, as some people may have heard or experienced, they can be expensive, they can be time-consuming, and you are dealing with more of that blank page to offer up something that hasn't been done before. But there's also ways to leverage the basic functionality of, you know, a page-turning, read-aloud property that's supported in the app space, and we still see a demand for those every day. Another great opportunity in this digital space, which I don't think was leveraged as much with print properties, is the ability to launch new content with unknown authors, unknown illustrators, and leverage a digital campaign where you're not competing for shelf space in a physical store. So this Binky the Pink Elephant is a great example of that. Again, unknown author, unknown illustrator. It was very early on in Zuka and iStoryTime's stage as a company as well. But with a digital campaign and a partially traditional PR campaign, been able to generate over 20,000 downloads for paid downloads for this title and another 25,000 free downloads, essentially just from using social channels like Facebook and Twitter, the ability to push out to a user base of just digital consumers who are looking for kids' picture books, and really launch something that's new and not have a lot of the risks that you do in traditional print and shelf space constraints. And with that, I'm going to hand it off to Theo.
That's working. Okay. So I think one of the most interesting questions of the current era is, are we there yet in terms of the future of books? It's pretty clear that the future of book distribution has arrived. In the sense that digital distribution, I mean, it may be very confusing. The future is not easy. It's not simple, but it's here. Everyone has to deal with it. Nobody is wondering anymore whether it's important to do, you know, digital versions of your books. I think it's only a matter of time before the digital version of the book is the book and a print version is a subsidiary licensing issue. Rather than, you know, we have a paper book and now we're going to try to make an e-book out of it. It's going to be the other way around. That's here. But that's different from the future of books. That's the future of distributing the thing that we already have in sort of mildly enhanced ways. Maybe some things rattle around on the screen or whatever. It's very common in the transitions that have happened in technologies in the past when television and movies first came about. People took Broadway shows and set a camera in the audience and pointed at the show because that was like, well, of course, what else are you going to do? That's how performances are done. They're done on a stage, and now we have a new medium, so we'll take that and put it. Years later, people figured out we could actually move the camera, and this was, you know, this was considered outrageous and experimental for a long time. And then, you know, eventually it became its own medium. That's the stage that we're at now, where people are slowly starting to wake up to the fact that once you have books on this new medium, you're not actually necessarily restricted to, talking about fixed layout versus reflowable and all that stuff. These are all ways of taking things that used to exist and try to sort of, you know, horseless carriage them into a new format. What we're trying to do through my new company, Touch Press, is really start from the opposite direction and find out by sort of market testing whether the world is actually ready for completely new ways of thinking about books, where we don't start from something that exists in print or in video or as a movie or whatever. Can you do that to a high standard within a reasonable budget? And we feel that there are sort of three things that you need to get right to make a real born digital sort of highly enhanced interactive book-like thing. Of all the companies that kind of are moving into this space, each of them seems to get two of those three things right. By that I mean print publishers, media companies, television, movie type companies, and computer game companies. So the first of the three is you have to have an author. I mean, you have to have a good book. If it doesn't make it as a book that somebody would want to read if it were in print, then you don't have a book and you should just go home. This is something, obviously, that print publishers deeply understand. They treat the authors as the royalty that they are because a great author is just not somebody that you can substitute for. But software and media companies often just don't understand that at all. Games companies are notoriously unable to understand the idea that if you're going to have a cutscene, it should actually be good, you know, as opposed to have a stupid storyline. Avatar is a two-hour cutscene, but it's one that had an actual storyteller involved in its creation, and it's great. The second thing you need is software developers, programmers, and they are every bit as temperamental and important as authors are. This is something, obviously, that computer games companies deeply understand. Their games live and die on the quality of their software developers, and they treat them like royalty. They don't do low-bid contracts for software development because they would simply fail. This is something that print publishing companies have a really hard time understanding. They think of software developers as somebody that you hire in the same way that you hire a typesetting service, and you get what you pay for when you do that. The third thing you need is visual media producers, people who are able to, you know, go out and come back with dynamic, exciting photographs, television, you know, video, and do that in a timely way on budget to a very high standard. Obviously, this is something that television companies really understand. Games and publishing companies, not so much. And in order to make a really good media new style interactive media product, you really have to get all three of those right. Another thing that I think is very important is to respect the past, but not forget that it is in the past. So, you know, a classic novel, a great television show, a great movie, these are great things, and perhaps they should be left that way. You know, a really good detective novel, just read it. You know, don't mess with it, because it's just not something you need to mess with. Often works like that are not necessarily very good raw material for being turned into interactive books. Sometimes it works, but it has to be done very carefully. Because if not, what you end up is what I describe as story plus distractions. You know, it's just, you can see this everywhere. And it applies to, you know, print books where somebody's taken a classic children's story or something like that and added a whole bunch of stuff that rattles around on the screen, or a bunch of stuff that you can touch it and it jumps. And, you know, this is perhaps interesting for some kids for a short length of time, but kids are smart. They figure out very quickly that, oh, I touch it, it jumps. Okay, what next? I want to go play Angry Birds. Because, you know, if I wanted to waste my time with stupid things that jump on the page, Angry Birds is way, way better, like seriously better than anything that any of these e-books have in terms of mindless time wasting. When a child goes to a book, I think what they're looking for is a much deeper experience, something where they read a compelling story and come away from that with a meaningful experience rather than one that is primarily involved with stuff jumping on the screen. I mean, it's both not what they're there for, and it's also pathetically inadequate compared to what the games companies can do. So, you know, what we're trying to do is, it's sort of the experiment. We're jumping in with both feet. We're trying to produce a list of high-quality interactive content created from scratch for specifically as interactive ebooks. And, you know, so far our experience is like with many publishers. We've had some hits, some really successful titles. We've had some duds. I'm not going to tell you which is which. But, you know, we feel like we're learning as we go along what works and what doesn't, what we're doing right, what we're doing wrong. One important lesson is trust your material. Trust the audience, especially if they're kids. If the underlying material is not interesting, adding distractions to it isn't going to help. It's just going to cheapen the experience. Lots of widgets and flashy navigation. That's what you do when you don't have interesting material to work with. When you have a compelling, interesting, underlying piece of material, then you try to avoid the distractions and get people into the experience as much as possible. It goes back to this, you know, don't make story plus distractions. Make a good story and then enhance it in meaningful ways. So the $64,000 question, and I wish it was only $64,000, is what's a reasonable budget to do this? You know, that is probably the principal thing that us and our investors are figuring out by trial and error. You know, it's difficult in a publishing business because it is so much hit based, where, you know, we have to kind of figure out what's the right average budget based on wildly, you know, spikes. We're obviously not going to make money on everyone. One of the things that we are doing, which I think is going to be crucial to this being a commercially successful venture, is to diversify in the other direction, which is to say, create high-quality medium for interactive media and material and writing for an interactive ebook, but then deploy it in other media. So, for example, The Elements, it's done well, 280,000 copies as an ebook at a decent price. But it's done much better as a print book. I mean, in terms of gross revenue, you know, it's good to do both, right? It's a waste to have this only as an ebook. Solar System was our second title. It's been very successful as an app, and it's doing very nicely as a print book. Black Dog and Leventhal has been a fabulous partner for us in turning our electronic ebook content into an app. In the case of The Elements, actually, the book came out first in print. Skulls, you know, you go to the Workman booth. Skulls is a lead title for Black Dog and Leventhal for this season in print. And it's a great book. It's a fabulous book. It's also a fabulous ebook. And it's not just print books. We have, unfortunately, you won't be able to hear any of this, but yeah, you can hear this. But this is just an absolutely fantastic performance of The Wasteland by Fiona Shaw. It's probably the best filmed performance of The Wasteland ever. And if we were on the ball about this, this would be available as a DVD or as a video in iTunes. And it's kind of just silly that it isn't. It's not really reasonable. You know, we have Kim Cattrall reciting Shakespeare sonnets. We have Doctor Who. We have Patrick Stewart. We have 154 sonnets recorded with, you know, 40 or so well-known actors and actresses. It's nuts not to release that in other media other than just our sonnets app that's coming out in a couple of weeks. So that's something that we're working for. Well, that's what I had to say. Thank you. Hopefully there's time for discussion.
We have very little time left. If there are any big questions people want to ask, one or two. Okay, one. Go for it.
Hi. This is for Lisa. So I worked in book publishing, and I worked in software publishing, and your nightmare and your opportunity is interesting to me because you're in the world of version control now, and the hardware is going to change, and you're going to have to make decisions. Your company is going to have to make decisions. Is this property worth bringing out the Palm 2 and the Windows CE and all the things that were just here 10 years ago that are gone? And so I just found it really interesting listening to you talk about that in children's books because I still have my copy of Hans Christian Andersen's Steadfast Tin Soldier from 1958. You know, it's a great book, but it doesn't take as much work to keep that going as this new digital world is going to require. So it's not a question, it's just I kind of feel your pain because I've seen those decisions in software companies and all these different hardware devices to support or not to support. And I think it's really out of the box for the publishing industry to be moving into those areas. But thank you for your presentation.
To that point, you're right. A book is never really done. And where in print, we've always had reprints, at least if you had the same press, you had the same printer, you had the same files, maybe you made some corrections, you went back and you know, over time they changed. We took foils off of covers, we downsampled things. The print book does change. But the ebooks, we've made the same kids' book over and over and over just in the last 2 years. I have to say, if I never see Go Dog Go again, that'd be really cool. But I know I will because it's a classic book and it deserves reinvention with every new opportunity it can have.
Yeah.
Good question on the number of different devices. So obviously I'm not from around here. We have a very limited number of devices down under. Is it as fractured in the European area as it is here? I mean, we only have Kindle and iPad. That's it. You seem to have a gazillion different devices.
I think it's probably more fractured at this point, or likely to be more fractured in Asia than it is in the U.S. The European community, for whatever reason, hasn't grown quite as quickly in terms of lots of devices, lots of fracturing of the market, which on one hand is kind of nice for users. Fewer choices make it a little bit easier to have some control, but also less interesting for users. So it's tough to say how things will expand. But yeah, it is. Somebody said before today that you should be testing on every device. And they were like, oh, and it just doesn't take a lot of time to do that. Like, I don't know where you live, but I got 4 different Kindles and 3 iPads. And, you know, if you really want to test every device, you need a lot of people, and you also are never going to test everyone because somewhere somebody's consuming your content on a device you've never seen.
If I could, to the gentleman at the far right, I'm sorry I didn't catch your name.
Theodore Gray.
Theodore. You touched on the concept of budget. 20 years ago when I first started creating digital books for kids, that the budget started out at $250,000. That was the beginning. We went up from there. Recently, I just created an entire ebook for less than $10. The entire thing.
Yeah, probably not counting your own time, though.
No, okay, so it's about $70. I come cheap. But the point is, and what I'm saying is that there's a massive difference in budget. And I'm not trying to detract from the software content. I'm just saying that the tools that are now available are just so much better.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
And they were 20 years ago.
Yeah, it's the same in filmmaking.
Yep.
You know, people can now go out and shoot a movie, and it's a pretty damn good movie for, you know, their own time and a few dollars.
Yep.
But on the other hand, you can't make The Avengers for a few dollars.
No.
You know.
So the question that I have here is, do you see the development of these tools progressing to the point where we can get this nirvana of one-step operation to take our ebook from the beginning, which is start the ebook and then progress all the way through to all platforms?
Yeah, I think that there will come a time when sort of people's concepts of what an ebook ought to do, what the thing that we refer to with the word book should do, is sufficiently crystallized that there will be smooth tools for doing that. You know, how many years that will be, I don't know. I think it's many years. And there will always be, you know, people wanting to kind of push the envelope. Right now, it's far too fluid and far too, you know, fragmented and changing what people would like their books to do in order for that to crystallize into a tool that makes it easy. But I think that will inevitably happen. And then a lot of what we're doing, for example, will no longer really matter. Hopefully what we've done will have influenced people's expectations and maybe raise the bar a little bit in people's expectations of what ebooks could be. But it has to standardize, just like, you know, cars had to standardize with the wheel on the left, otherwise it would have been chaos. Well, it's, like I say, it's chaos.
Okay, I think we're about out of time. Yeah.
I just have one quick question. Mm-hmm. I mean, it seems like one challenge that I see is that you can do an ebook and the cost of conversion of taking that book to the ebook is not that great. And you can sell it for a much higher price point in the iBook store than you can by spending six figures on up for a really good, fabulous app in the App Store. Now, I see that you're charging $13.99, which I think that's fabulous for all the interactivity that you have there. But from my experience, the apps that you have in the App Store, you know, they're competing with the games, and people are like, well, you know, the game's 99 cents or free. Why is that app more, even though the cost of doing that app is so much greater? I mean, what is your sense of Apple and their openness to kind of have a book, enhanced book app store?
Yeah, I wish they would, and I wish that people would just pay more for everything.
Yeah.
But, you know, you can't always get what you wish. It is bizarre. I mean, the fact that you can look at the exact same product, you can pay one price for it as an app, you can pay it a much higher price as an ebook. You can pay a possibly lower price for the physical book from Amazon because they're losing money on it. And then you can pay twice as much as any of that for the audiobook version, which includes no visual material at all. You know, where is the logic in that? And by the way, the ebook includes a complete reading of it, yet is a fifth the price of the audiobook edition. None of this makes any sense. And because it makes no sense, it will probably shake out over the course of the next few years. I certainly hope so.
Okay, thank you.